Are you listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other platform where you can leave a rate or review? Do you like what we're doing? If the answer to all of that is yes, please consider quickly giving us a 5-star rate. And if you wouldn't mind leaving us a nice review, we greatly appreciate that as well. Okay, let's do this.
Hello, welcome to the Ghosts of Harrenhal. My name's Simon.
And I'm McKelly.
Thank you for joining us for episode 167 of our chapter-by-chapter book review of A Song of Ice and Fire by George Martin. Today, we'll be discussing chapter 23 of A Storm of Swords. That's Daenerys 2.
Ow. I took my jacket off and threw it onto the ground, and a static electricity went into my microphone, went into my headphone earbud.
You know, the first time Carson and I went anywhere and stayed in a hotel, we were in upstate New York, and in the middle of the night, I went to the bathroom, and I reached out to the light switch, and from about 9 inches away, a spark flew across. Carson said she saw my shadow on the wall. This thing was like, it was incredible. It was like a bolt of light.
Like,
I mean, I howled when that thing
hit. You were like Zeus.
It was coming my way, though. Zeus wants to send it away from here.
Anyway, so we're going to chat about the chapter and try not to spoil any future plot points for you. And hopefully we're going to provide you some entertainment along the way, which I think we've already gotten off to a good start on.
Check. No more of that. We'll summarize what happened, discuss our thoughts on it, provide some useful background, compare it to the television show, indulge in a little pedantry, and cover some relevant news and listener correspondence. Be sure to check out the show notes. They'll provide some additional information about the characters and geography of this chapter, particularly helpful if you're not reading along. How are you, McKelly?
I am doing just fine. I'm doing just fine. Starting to head toward the holiday spirit. We are aware that this conversation right here perfectly encapsulates the two of us. I've already bought multiple Christmas decorations for the yard.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I really like the holidays. I just, you know, I like other people to do the work.
Right. Yeah, I can understand that. I am doing well. Molly's in a production right now, and it's opening night is tomorrow night. So,
what is the production?
It is The Great All-American Musical Disaster, is what it's called.
Okay,
and
is that the official title?
That's what I'll call it after tomorrow's opening night. Oh, but man, is Shiva working long hours? They put in probably 10-hour days Saturday and Sunday. They're there. She's there from immediately after school ends till she's not home yet. She probably won't be. It's after 7 p.m. or right now, and she probably won't be home for another hour and a half. So she'll be glad when. She has the. I guess you'd say the second female lead, third
not bad,
overall.
Not bad.
So
cool.
Yeah. So she's excited.
I wish her well.
Thank you.
How long is the run?
It is 5 shows. So, yes.
Okay. Well, if I could stand being in a room with other people, I would go and cheer her on. But you know me, other people.
I'll try and record it on my phone and send it to you. So, how are you? How are you doing?
I'm fine. I have a slightly seasonal story, actually, while we're talking about seasonal things. So, last night I went to Homeowners Association annual meeting.
Uh-huh.
And
always a comedic gold, I'm sure.
No, it isn't. It's particularly because the lady who runs the management firm who manages the subdivision, whatever, she's a nice lady and she works hard and I have no complaints, but she has a tendency to just drone on. And so I reckon that when I got home, I summarized the entire meeting for Carson in about 30 seconds. And even at sort of normal pace, it would have taken about 15 minutes. But we were there for 2 hours. So just, it wasn't great. But anyway, the final part of the thing was about flooding issues. And she started a very long monologue about the way the water flows through the property with an anecdote about how one Christmas Eve, she was, there's the seasonal part.
Oh, right, right.
She was recovering. She was 5 weeks away from having her knee replaced. She'd had her knee replaced 5 weeks earlier, but it was raining so hard that she had her galoshes on and she was out there hoeing a trench to stop one of the properties from flooding.
Oh, wow.
And so then she started talking about the way the water flows through the property. She went on and on, probably 10 more minutes. And when she finally...
Did she break out a watershed table and stuff?
Literally, yes. She had that pinned up. She had, like, arrows showing where the water went. When she finally stopped, I turned to my... I was sitting at a table. There were some people who I don't know sitting at the table. But I said, look, if it's Christmas Eve and you're hoeing, then you're ho-ho-hoeing. I said, how do you leave that joke unsaid? I mean, it's right there in front of you.
It's a story about Christmas Eve, and you're literally talking about hoeing.
From that moment till the end, I never listened to another word she said, because I was just like, I got to tell that joke. I cannot wait for that joke.
The minute she stopped talking.
She'd said it by the time I said it.
Well, I appreciated it.
Though my table mates liked it too. They all laughed. They all thought it was funny.
Indeed, as they should have.
One of the people at the table was like a girl somewhere between the ages of 14 and 30. I've given up trying to guess people's age. I have no idea. She bucked in her seat laughing. She was like...
Spilled her coffee. Yeah. Or orange Rad juice.
Got a coffee. Spilled it. But one property's been sold to like the third largest property ownership company in the country, and they've rented it out to, I mean, by the hour, it sounded like. I mean, they said they've got people just turning over all the time.
Oh,
and one guy had an F-250, and he brought it and he jumped out, he left the engine running, and it slipped into gear and it careered around the parking lot, smashing into everyone's cars. And when the guy came out and saw what happened, he jumped in it, drove off, and has not been seen again since. So everybody's screwed. They can't get insurance.
Oh, my goodness.
Because they don't know who he was. The company who owns the place won't tell anyone. They're not responsible. So,
oh, wow. That's
the same
terrible.
Guy, the guy who had his... The guy who had his car most damaged by that was an older African-American guy, and I felt so bad for him. Because then he said, one day he came out and there was a child having a seizure outside this place. He'd never seen this child before, but the child was having a seizure. So he called 911 and had an ambulance come for it. Would you believe the hospital is billing him?
Him?
Him. He doesn't even know who the kid was.
Why would the hospital...
Because they can't get anyone to sort of like to pay it, so they've tried to bill him for it.
What?
The guy whose car's been wrecked and who's tried to save the kid. God.
He needs to quit going outside.
I know.
Become a hermit.
Take that, good Samaritan.
No good deed goes unpunished.
Exactly. I left, I don't know the guy, but as I left, I saw him and I said, I just want to say I'm so sorry for your troubles. He was like, oh, thanks.
Oh, wow.
It's like, yeah.
That is something.
All right, let's get down to business.
Let's do
it. How did we leave Daenerys Targaryen? Last we saw of Dany, she was sailing from Carth back to Pentos on three ships sent by Magister Illyrio, along with his two emissaries, Strong Belwas and Arston Whitebeard. Arston told Dany a bit about her brother and father, leaving out the whole Mad King aspects of Aerys. Jorah Mormont convinced Dany to redirect the ships to Slaver's Bay to buy an army of slaves, using Mopatis's goods in the ship's stores as payment. Then travel across Essos on land to Pentos. Finally, Jorah unexpectedly, probably not to Jorah, kisses Dany and suggests she marry him and another so that the dragon will have three heads, like her vision in the House of the Undying indicated. Michele, after that long digression where we outtake after outtake, why don't we give the summary of this one?
Oh, that's definitely going to land in the outtakes. So Daenerys and company are in Astapor, one of the cities in Slaver's Bay. She and Arston are visiting a master slaver, Krasnismo Naklos, to negotiate the purchase of unsullied, eunuch slave soldiers of incorruptible loyalty who feel no pain and follow orders to the letter. It's hot, and Dany is beneath a canopy. but the ranks of Unsullied stand at attention in the blazing sun without blinking an eye. Krasniz speaks a corrupted version of High Valyrian, and his words are translated for Dany by a slave girl. Unbeknownst to Krasniz, Dany understands him perfectly.
Krasniz is a deeply unpleasant character, utterly obnoxious towards Dany, sadistic towards the Unsullied, and abusive towards the slave girl. He explains that they have 8,000 Unsullied at the present, each of which is a survivor of years of brutal training, which included severe psychological trauma. It's not how Krasniz portrays it.
Right.
Just to be clear. That's my interpretation. Each raised a puppy for a year before being ordered to strangle the dog. Each completes his training by purchasing an infant slave and murdering it on the spot. They feel no pain because they drink the wine of courage with every meal. It's a poison that slowly kills the pain receptors. They feel less and less with each year. He demonstrates by cutting the nipple from a soldier who doesn't even react.
Ow. Arsten taps his staff more fervently with each word that comes from Krasny's mouth. Dany asks Whitebeard what he thinks. And she's happy for the translator to hear Arsten say that they shouldn't buy Unsullied. That slavery is an abomination to the old gods and the new. So if she lands in Westeros, she may lose allies that would have otherwise joined her. Krasniz insists that there are other buyers interested, although the translator lets it slip that they're only interested in 100 of them. Krasniz tells them it won't be cheap, comparing the Unsullied to Valyrian steel.
Dany wants a night to think it over. They return to the ship. En route, Dany notices that the city is not as populous as it clearly once was, and sees many signs of structural decay. Arsten warns her against dabbling in slavery. She needs an army, but Sejora has a history with slavery that other allies won't share. Dany's mind wanders to Jorah's advances, which have awakened something within her, but her dreams are of younger, more handsome men. Eri woke one night to find Dany pleasuring herself and lent a hand, adding to Dany's confusion.
When she gets back, she lashes out at Mormont for bringing her here, apologizes to Eri for the bite she received from Drogon. Eri offers herself to Dany, but Dany explains that she doesn't want that, generally. That evening, Mormont approaches Dany again, explaining that Aegon didn't land on Westeros to a sea of supportive banners. He won it by fire and blood, the Targaryen words. Dany's going to have to do the same. If an army of Unsullied costs you a few allies at the outset, that's unfortunate. But the Unsullied themselves more than compensate for that loss.
Dany thinks of the cost. 8,000 dead babies, 8,000 dead puppies, and doesn't want that on her hands. Jorah points out that when King's Landing was sacked, there was incredible butchery and mass rape. Her Unsullied would not do that. So if she can live with the sins of the past, she might forge a better future. She compares herself to Rhaegar. He fought with free men who he had knighted personally and who believed in his cause. All that's true, Countess Mormont, but Rhaegar lost and Dany needs to win.
Sure would help if she won.
Yeah. Yes.
With the, your Deadpool Easter egg from, from Jamie 3. Which I guess was two episodes ago. Remember, we were talking about the Maiden Pool. The pool in Maiden Pool was crowded with corpses.
Deadpool, if you will. Yes.
You snuck Deadpool into the summary. Bran the Man from our Discord server was cracking up at that.
Okay. Good.
I'm glad. He said it made her do a spit take, basically.
Well, I think we've got some outtakes coming from what we've done so far, so that
oh yes,
be, yeah,
we could do a whole outtake episode from what we've done already. We just get to the discussion part.
My problem is so I mean, I try to read the whole thing in advance, but I kind of, you know, once I know roughly what we're going to say, I start to skim read a little bit, and so then when I'm reading it, I often feel the need to extemporize on what I'm saying, not knowing that the very next sentence is exactly what I'm now extemporizing, and then I get thrown by the next sentence, and yeah, it happened a few times.
Oh, and it was quite comical. I got a good laugh out of that. I was laughing so hard I was out of breath afterward.
So geography-wise, Dany's made it, as the crow flies, about a third of the way from Carth back to Pentos. But the remainder, if they were to go by sea, again, Jorah's plan is to sell everything and march back. But if they were to go by sea, it would involve a significant jag south around the ruins of Valyria, and then a northern leg up the side of up the narrow sea.
Right.
So quite a lot of sailing still to go. Probably less than a quarter of the actual distance has been achieved. But by land, it's no easier because Astapor is on the eastern side of the Slaver's Bay. So they have to walk all the way around Slaver's Bay and then start the Thousand League March to Pentos. So it's
right.
They're not close yet.
Yeah. Astapor is the furthest south in the bay of the major slaver cities.
And on the east side of the bay, yes. Not the west side. Yeah. Because the bay is... The bay is basically has a southern opening. It's a right. bite out of the southern
coast
of Essos.
Right. It's got Yunkai above Astapor, northern northwise, and then Marine is the northernmost of the three slaver cities. There are other cities around the bay. Like there's an island called El Ria or something like that, and then there's a town on the both that's on the west coast, and there's a city or town called Tolos on the west coast, and then there's a little island kind of between Astapor and Yunkai that's called Yaros. So,
okay.
Kind of gives you an idea of the layout of Slaver's Bay.
I noticed that the slave girl who's in this chapter, they mentioned that she's from Narth, I think.
Yeah.
And I was looking for Narth on the map. It took me a while to find it. It's an island south of Slaver's Bay.
Right.
Which is interesting because there is a city right at the north of Essos called Sarth. And it feels like Sarth and Narth are...
Or backward.
Sarth is way north of Narth.
Yes. But so the first thing... The chapter kind of opens with Dany looking at this statue of the Harpy of Astapor. And kind of give you a little bit of background and about Astapor and Old Gis before it. And it makes it quite clear that Astapor basically sold its soul to the slave trade. And because even the statues, there's two harpy statues in Astapor, and they both have chains in the talons as opposed to the lightning bolt that the harpy of Gis had in her talons.
Yeah.
So, and yeah,
if you change the emblem of the town to something with a chain in it, you're really embracing your slavery, I feel.
Right. Right. Yeah. And, you know, the whole town is made up of red bricks, and it's clear, they make it quite clear that it's a symbolism of their reliance on the slave trade. In fact, Arsten recites an old saying that goes something like, "Bricks and blood built Astapor, and bricks and blood her people." And then, in case there's any doubt as to what that means, he follows it up by saying that the bricks of Astapor are red with the blood of the slaves who make them. And, so, you know, they certainly want you to have the image of a town that is completely dependent on the slave trade.
But also fallen from its high point, it seems. I mean, this is slightly later in the chapter, but as she's riding through the city, she feels like it's somewhat depopulated, and you know, there's sort of beggars in the street, and it's not the wealth you might associate with slavery is sort of somewhat absent. Although I think the wealth that slavery generates is often very directed into a very small number of people, and the Krasnesses of this world are clearly doing okay for themselves.
Right. The way they describe the city kind of decaying either sounds like a dying city or people in the city have gotten fat and lazy and no longer putting an effort in to maintain it.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
you know, as disgusted as she is over the horror of the slave trade and what she sees in the city, her Dothraki contribute as much as anybody, as much as any group does to this slave trade, because she knows where many of these slaves come from. She saw it firsthand at that Lazarine village where we met Miri Mazdor. Jorah told her at the beginning of that chapter that there were 10,000 Dothraki captives, and then the captives from the Lazarine village, and she knew that they would take them to Slaver's Bay to be sold, and she knew that it was the price that she had to pay to get the Iron Throne. And Jorah even mentioned in that chapter that he told Drogo Drago to fight Rocky. He told Drago to take those slaves to Marine because he can get a better price there than from a slave caravan, and that Illyrio sent him a letter that the brothels in the free cities are paying double for young girls and triple for boys under 10. And then he followed it up with, if enough survive the journey to the free cities, they'll have plenty of gold to buy the ships they need to take them to Westeros. So,
yeah. So, just a question here. Has Dany been expressing her own reservations about slavery? Because it feels like a lot of this chapter is really a debate between Arston and Jorah. Or Jorah is like, you know, let's get these Unsullied. We'd have an army behind us, and it would be a really good army. And I don't care about slavery, as my presence here shows. Arston, on the other hand, is like, you'll lose people if you lose allies. Has she expressed much of a feeling one way or the other?
Well, I think a little bit. Like, she mentions to Eerie in this chapter, when Eerie says, do you want me to pleasure you again? And she says, you know, you don't have to do that. You're not a bed slave. I've freed you. So I think she's freed the people that she could free within her own structure.
But then that brings to me the sort of simple question here. She could buy these slaves and then free them. I mean,
true.
She can, yes, people would not believe her. They would say they're the Unsullied, they're slaves. They always have been, always will be. But she could say, no, I've given them their freedom. And it just feels like there's a middle way here between the two.
Sure.
Between what Arston and Jorah are saying.
And Krasniz asks her, or she asks Krasniz, what if my enemies offer them gold for freedom? Or offer them freedom to come to, you know, their side? And he said they will kill them they'd kill that person out of hand. They have no use for freedom.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, that's easy for him to say.
Yeah, I mean, clearly they are brainwashed, and so possibly he's right. But at the same time, I mean, what else are they going to do? If you gave them freedom at this point, they would probably say, well, can I stay in your army? Will you continue to feed me? You know,
right. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, several times while reading through this chapter, I imagined in my head, what is it like in their barracks? Like when they're not standing out there for a day and night at attention and they're just in the Unsullied barracks, what are they doing during their downtime? You don't imagine they're playing poker and, you know, telling
they're
tales.
Probably telling the younger generation not to get too attached to that puppy.
Don't play with that puppy. Do play with that puppy. Yes, yeah. it would be quite the culture shock for them to be able to grasp the basically
I also wonder
how
if this,
to become free.
Yeah, if this wine of courage dulls their senses somewhat. I mean, obviously it does dull their senses in the fact that they don't feel pain anymore. But I wonder if they're... I mean, one of the things that Krasniz says is that they don't have any lieutenants in their ranks. I mean,
you have to
provide the leadership because they just don't have it. And I just wonder if they're a little bit sort of slack-jawed. You know, they don't really, you know, have much thoughts of their own because they've been
very
so
good
brainwashed
thought.
And they're drugged as well.
Yeah, good thought. Good thought. And I'm surprised because the Wine of Courage contains nightshade, they drink it every day of their lives. They don't have blue lips. Why don't they have blue lips if they're drinking nightshade?
You are. Good question.
Maybe it's just a drop of nightshade.
So it was a smart idea of Jorah to pretend that they needed a translator. I mean, he wasn't present, but he told Dany to do that.
Right.
And it was a really good way to get information. Like, for instance, she overhears the translator say back to Krasniz, that guy only wanted 100 of this. And she's like, shut up, don't tell them that.
Right.
By which time, of course, Dany had heard it.
Yeah, it's definitely a good way to get a leg up.
Yeah, mostly what she got from it was a stream of insults aimed at her. That's really what she heard.
It was constant, her and Arston. It was just constant. And she thinks to herself, my bear is smarter than he looks for suggesting that we pretend we don't know Hive Valyrian. Well, that was quite the backhanded compliment. He looks like a dummy, but he's not. But one thing that wasn't quite clear is whether Krasniz was doing the same to her. Because he nods when Missandei, who's the slave girl, is telling Danny and Arston about the Unsullied. But, of course, it could just been a spiel that he knew by heart. He didn't need to necessarily know the words to know she was telling her things that he was agreeing with, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, of course, if you're in business with someone, even if you speak a language reasonably well, you might have a translator to just make sure there's no mistakes. So it's definitely possible he could understand some of what Danny was saying. It's a good question, though, whether or not he did.
I would think he must know some common tongue, at least.
Yeah, and you mentioned that the slave girl was called Missandei. I don't think that gets mentioned in this chapter, but it is, her name is Missandei. I mean,
good point. Yeah.
No, it's fine. I don't think that's a big spoiler. It's just her name. It just didn't get mentioned.
Yes, I forgot about that.
I only remembered it because I remembered the equivalent character in the TV show. And when I looked it up, yes, sure enough, it is the same character, but she was just made into a young lady in the TV show, whereas she's
supposed to be 10 here.
10, yes.
Yeah.
Or 9, you can never tell with you.
Although I did find it ironic that he disparages Valyria in favor of old Giss, doing so in High Valyrian.
Yeah, well. You know? The Unsullied training is... it's so ghastly. It's sort of almost comic. I mean, it just feels like the cost of the sort of dogs and the slave babies, it just feels like the Unsullied would end up both so damaged as to be, like, actually damaged beyond useful, and also it's expensive beyond the realms of anyone to buy. I mean, they've been raised there for 10 years. And eating and, you know, sleeping, all of the costs that went into this, and then these ridiculous costs thrown on top just to make them awful and hateful.
Yeah, yeah. She thinks they're between, 14 and 24, something like that?
Yeah, something like
that. When she's looking at them, so some of them have
been there.
But
they're taken as young boys, right?
I mean, yeah. So I think they start their training, she said, at age 5.
Yeah.
So some of them have been in there for almost 20 years. You got to wonder why some of those have been in training for 20 years.
Yeah.
They just couldn't kill that dog. They let it die of old age.
No, but they said the ones who don't kill the dogs get killed themselves and fed to the dogs, right?
Yeah, yes, something. It is.
So awful.
And one thing he says, kind of bragging to Danny, is that the soldiers that they're looking at, the group of soldiers that he paraded out in front of her, have been standing in place for a day and night without food or water. And I thought, for what purpose? Danny won't know that. I mean, what?
They're your prized asset.
Right.
Don't hurt them unnecessarily.
Yeah. So, and then they get rather unconventional names like Red Flea, Brown Flea, Black Rat, Blue Toad. And surely that's done to ensure that none of them have enough self-esteem left to protest against such a name.
Right. And specifically, they pull that name out of a hat every day.
Yes,
so they have a different name every day. So essentially, they have no identities of their own.
Yes. And Arston is... He finds it unbelievable that a man could learn a new name every day. But when he said that, I was like, but he... Krasniz just told you it's on a plaque on their belt, sword belt. If they can't remember, they can just look down at it. It's not like they get told it and then have to remember it for the day.
I had forgotten that they were pharmaceutically enhanced to not feel the pain. I thought it was all training. In the TV show, I think it's all training. But I can see how that might give them an edge, you know, sort of like heedlessly ignoring the pain when you're in battle is probably a good thing.
Oh yeah, sure. Definitely give it. As long as it's not like you said, as long as it doesn't addle their brains a bit, you know. As long as they can think freely enough to do the tasks they need to do, then it would certainly give them some advantage.
Just coming back to the fact that they don't have captains or hierarchy within their ranks, I do feel that that's something of an omission. If I was a rich merchant looking to buy Unsullied, I don't have any military training. They have a ton of military training. I'm supposed to tell them what to do. I mean,
right.
You're making my life more difficult by not having that in place.
Yeah. And you'd have to think it might take regular officers and generals time to adjust to leading Unsullied, who are so different than traditional soldiers. You know, giving them a rah-rah speech isn't really going to do a whole lot.
Can you imagine how much time it would save?
True.
I'm not going to give you the rah-rah speech. I just want you to go over and do this.
Right.
Okay.
And Krasnus mentions that they're only sold by the units of thousand. He says by the thousand or by the century. I assume he means by the thousand or hundred units.
Yeah. It's very confusing. It feels like if they're sold by the thousand or by the hundred, then they're sold by the hundred.
Right.
You could get 10 of those.
That's what confused me. That's why I assume he meant the thousand or the hundred. But he says that they used to sell them by the tens for household guard, but it was too easy for them to assimilate into the general population and mix with the regular soldiers and the free folk. And, you know, when Jorah proposed this idea in the last chapter, this Unsullied idea, Dany was not so hot on it because she only knew those fat eunuch household guards she saw in Pentos. And those are the soft ones that Krasnus is saying, yeah, we don't produce those any longer.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
Hello, friends. Are you ready to make some unforgettable memories? Well, if so, consider the Marriott Bonvoy program. Discover the perfect destination for your summer getaway and unlock exclusive deals on luxurious accommodations. With our affiliate partnership, you'll enjoy unbeatable savings and a seamless booking experience. Don't let summer slip away. Visit Marriott Bonvoy today and make this vacation season one for the books. Use our Ghosts of Harrenhal affiliate page to check it all out and buy Bonvoy points or give some as a gift. The link to our page is in the show notes.
Yeah, so Dany has got this difficult choice because a slave army would be abhorrent to the Westerosi, but with the same money she could buy sellswords, but we know that they're fickle and unreliable. One thing she does not want, and this is definitely her opinion, not anyone else's, she doesn't want to arrive back in Pentos a beggar. But, I mean, she's going to steal from Illyrio Mopatis and make herself not a beggar. I mean, I'm not sure that's a way better. You know.
Good point. I had not thought about that comparison there.
Yeah, but both of those options, the Unsullied or the sellswords, are going to cost a lot. I'm not really sure. I mean, obviously, they've got these three ships with all the goods on board. I mean, it feels like that would be hard to get 8,000 Unsullied for that. I don't know. I don't know how valuable the Unsullied are. But again, just thinking about their training, they're going to be top dollar. And 8,000 of them is a lot.
Yes. Good point. Yeah. She's getting two very different opinions and advice on the Unsullied from Jorah and Arston. Arston is, you know, saying the slavery is an abomination in Westeros, you'll lose much support that you'd otherwise have that would rally to you when you finally strike your banners. And, you know, Jorah is like, yes, they're not free men like those that fought for your brother Rhaegar, but they'll do whatever you tell them to do and they won't rape and pillage.
Right. And I think the other key part of that is you land in Westeros, not just with your banners and hopes, but with an army behind you, you know.
Right.
That's, I do think the one of the salient points that he makes is that it will minimize collateral damage. Yeah, there's a lot of baggage that comes with this. And certainly, if you feel bad about 8,000 dead puppies and 8,000 dead babies, it would be hard to look at these guys and stomach what they've done. But if they behave themselves in battle, and especially in the aftermath of battle, then you can feel a lot better about that, because we've seen very few examples of a force of non-Unsullied doing anything but atrocities when they've got the opportunity to.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, it's certainly
the good guys and the bad guys.
Yeah, it certainly would be better than what would have happened if Drogo came with his Khalasar. I mean, That's how they pay their soldiers, is rape, pillage. You remember that Lazarine village that I was talking about earlier? There was some horrible atrocities going on in that village.
Yeah.
So
yeah, in some ways, you know, that's just something that Danny doesn't have to figure out now, because it was always going to be a problem. Because
right.
they were going to, had they got over there and, you know, helped her win the Iron Throne, they would have wanted payment in slaves and in trouble.
Yes, exactly. And that's the thing. She would, there would have been a culture barrier there, because the Dothraki think of enslavement, you know, conquering and enslaving, where she wants to subdue and then rule. So, right. So this way, as long as she can trust herself not to command the Unsullied to do awful things, then it's better for those who are defeated.
The thing is, okay, just setting aside my conscience for a moment, if I am Dany and I'm trying to win the Iron Throne, I can't think of the scenario in which I think it would be strategically advantageous for my army to do atrocities.
Right.
I want them to win the battles, but then they don't have to kill the citizenry. There's never a reason for that. There's
right.
never a good reason for that.
Yes, I'm with you.
So sorry, obviously I didn't put aside my conscience. It was still there the whole time. So Danny's confused and troubled by Geo Mormont's advances. She trusts him. She values his advice. She wants him close. But she's just not into him the way he is to her.
Yes.
That seems to be his problem.
Yeah, and her problem, because she doesn't know what to do about him. She was very testy with him when she returned from the ship, including slapping him in the face in front of everyone. Everyone stopped what they were doing to watch this scene unfold. And
And just to add to that, even later on, he calls her Dany and she says, "Your Highness" or "Your Grace."
Your Grace, right. Your Grace, yeah. And surely she's still upset about the kiss. She felt that it was inappropriate and that he doesn't fully respect her as his queen, because no true knight would kiss his queen without prior permission. But I think she's also upset about what she just experienced in Astapor and is taking it out on Jorah.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not his fault, the slave situation, but it was his idea to go here and, you know, buying this slave army. But then I thought he possibly should have thought twice before proposing that someone who'd basically been sold into slavery to go consider buying slaves.
But she is a Dothraki Khaleesi. I mean, she may not be a completely normal Khaleesi, but she is a Khaleesi. On some levels, they set aside their concerns about this.
Yeah. And one thing she thinks to herself before we move off of her confusing feelings for Jorah is that she hasn't allowed herself to be alone with Jorah since that kiss.
Right.
Which, one, likely keeps him from making another advance, which is what she's afraid he's going to do if he gets another opportunity. But I'm sure he's picking up on that, and it's probably hard for him because he kind of takes pride in him being her top confidant.
Right. Of course, I mean, she can use her handmaids as a buffer.
Yes.
I think he would probably keep his hands to themselves if they were close by. But his attentions have revived her interest in sex, which has been sort of like quiesced since losing Drogo. To the point of using Eri for pleasure in the middle of the night. Danny's somewhat embarrassed about that whole thing, but Eri is completely blasé about it, as if it's, you know, every thing. You know?
Right. Like, want me to wash your dishes, or...
Exactly. It's no big deal. But that only adds to Danny's guilt and confusion, to be honest.
Right.
But it mentions that she's having dreams about younger, more handsome men. So, you know, maybe there's... romance in her future if she can find such a person.
Yeah, she thought...
One of the 8,000 Unsullied. Wait, no.
Definitely not. She thought that after Drogo died, she lost all those kind of feelings.
Yeah.
But this kiss has awoken them, so...
Yeah.
So, speaking of distrust, she thinks that Jorah still distrusts Arstyn, and she can't quite figure out why. She wonders if it's jealousy that she's found another man to interact with and to take advice from. And of course that is definitely possible, because we've suggested that he's given counsel in the past that, if you look at it in the right light, it leans toward keeping her all to himself.
Yeah.
So it's definitely possible that it's jealousy.
Yeah. The flip side of that, of course, is there is something weird about Arston. I mean, he
yes,
is much
Jorah
too
points
old
it
to be
out
Esquire.
To her. Right.
Yeah, and Jorah absolutely points this out. Yeah. He is too old to be a squire, and he's way too outspoken, too frank in his advice and counsel to Dany for a squire.
Right.
He's yeah. clearly someone who's been at a higher level at some point in his life and is comfortable giving advice to people of Danny's stature.
It does feel that way. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Got to be careful of spoilers, because even I know that one. the slavers send appraisers to the ships to sort of appraise all of the what they've got. During that period is where Eri gets bitten by Drogon, who's incensed by being confined while Dany's away. So I still think it's a bit weird to sell Mopatis's belongings.
Yes, it is. You're not wrong. It's weird. He sent these ships to save you and bring you home, and you're like, oh, we're gonna repay you by stealing all of your stuff.
But I mean, that's a good reason to turn up with 8,000 Unsullied behind you. Here are my ships. I sold them for this lot. You got a problem? No.
It kind of reminds me of that scene from Dumb and Dumber when Jim Carrey is sent to the grocery store with like their last $30 or something, and he comes back with a sombrero and one of those paddles with the ball on the stick. Oh yeah, but yeah, I mean, it's like you said, it's unclear how expensive Unsullied are, how much she can buy. It's unclear of how much. The price, the cost of all the goods that are in the stores of these three ships will add up to. So right. we're at the moment don't know what the balance sheet is going to look like.
Yeah. But I mean, all right, these are decent sized trading ships, right? How many Unsullied do you get for an empty ship? I mean, I'm thinking 250 maybe? Maybe 500?
We'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored by Audible. To get a free audiobook, or two if you're an Amazon Prime member, go to our exclusive URL, audibletrial.com/ghostsharrenhal. You can find the link in our show notes.
I don't know, it's difficult, but it just feels like you wouldn't get 1,000.
Yeah, I don't know how priceless, I don't know how expensive what all he has in these stores are, but...
Yes, so... I was talking about the empty ship. Obviously, the what's in the ships is different, and maybe that will tip you over the edge. But the ships themselves, if I had a trading ship, and you had Unsullied, and we were coming to some trade, I don't think I would get 1,000 for my ship.
No, not for the ship alone. Yeah, I was thinking the ship... The stores in the ships probably worth more than the ships themselves.
Yeah, I mean, it depends what that is. You know, if it's expensive silks or expensive spices, that kind of thing can.
Yeah, and I think Jorah mentioned listed some of the items last chapter, but I can't remember now what they were. Of course,
just in passing, Dany does have three priceless dragons.
She does. Yes,
that is one thought. I mean, but. We know she's not going to be willing to part with those, but
right.
That doesn't mean Krasnys might not ask for one of those.
Yes. Does he even know? Because she's not, you know, she's not parading around with one. So I wonder True. If she's told.
But then again, without knowing that, how's she even getting an audience with him? Who are you?
The Queen of Westeros.
Yeah, well, I don't see that photograph of you on the Iron Throne, lady.
Let me see some evidence of that.
Yeah. So Dany and Jorah discuss why the Dothraki don't sack Astapor. The walls are poorly defended. They're crumbling. The warriors of the town, who are known as the Sons of the Harpy, are soft and weak. There are a couple of reasons that Jorah explains. I mean, one of them is that the Dothraki are afraid of the Unsullied.
Yes, right, yeah.
We've had that before, that the Dothraki cut off their own braids and threw it at the feet of the Unsullied because the Unsullied were such strong fighters. Right. And if they were to attack, well, all the Unsullied that are in Astapor would be brought to defense of the city.
Right.
So the Dothraki don't want to mess there, which is interesting. Yeah. I mean, gives you a sense of how strong, how good the Unsullied might be.
Yeah, we learned last chapter when Jorah made his pitch for the Unsullied. He mentioned the legend of the 3,000 of Kohor when the Kohorak hired two sellsword companies to prepare for a Dothraki advance. And then as an afterthought, they sent for 3,000 Unsullied. Of course, as sellswords do when things go wrong, the sellswords fled. The Unsullied arrived, even though they were outnumbered 3,000 to 25,000 by the Dothraki Khalasar. They hung in and fought to a stalemate. And then eventually the Dothraki gave up, rode past, cut off their braids, and threw them down before the Unsullied. So that's the that's the story he's referring to there.
Yeah. So. But then they also mentioned that, like, as in Pentos, the high and mighty of Astapor bribed them not to invade their city. I do wonder about that, though, because it's like a protection racket. I mean, if give someone money not to attack you, they'll be back the next day if you ask for more of the same. I just feel like if they're afraid to fight the Unsullied, leave it at that.
Right, you don't need that extra.
Exactly.
You got some repairs to do around your city. Your one harpy doesn't even have a tail anymore. Use some of that money on tail repair.
Yeah, and then Dany compares herself to Rhaegar and feels that buying slaves is incommensurate with trying to live up to her older brother. But Jorah not unreasonably points out, yeah, but he lost. You know, he did not. He was killed. He was surrounded by brave, loyal men who chose to be with him and fought for his cause, but they lost.
Yeah.
If you surround yourself with incredible fighters who are there just because they've been bought and told to fight, and you win, well, you won.
Right. Yeah, I think Dany fears that the buying the Unsullied feels like a desperate act that something Viserys would do. She mentions Viserys would buy as many Unsullied as he could afford, but you said I'm more like my brother Rhaegar. So my brother Rhaegar, you know, he had free men fighting for him at their will. And, you know, Jorah said, well, yeah, he did have that. They fought honorably. They fought nobly. All of it amounted to nothing in the end because he lost, he died, and Robert stepped over his dead body to claim the Iron Throne. So you might have to do things slightly different than that. That's his advice, anyway.
I will say, if she's comparing herself to Viserys, stealing Illyrio's ships is right in the Viserys wheelhouse, I would say.
Good point.
Anyway, do you have some background for us?
I do have some. So, I don't think we mentioned this yet, but Krasnus spends a good amount of time telling Dany about how Astapor is descended from the old Empire of Gis. I think we mentioned it a little bit in the beginning of the discussion.
Yes, you did. I remember you.
Even the Harpy of Astapor is taken from the Harpy of Gis. Of course, like I mentioned, the major modification being the slave shackles replacing the lightning bolt that the Harpy has in its talons. So, the old Empire of Gis is one of the oldest known nations to have existed. During its height, it ruled over much of Essos. It's so ancient that its existence and apex of its civilization predates the Valyrian freehold by thousands of years. The empire began in the now ruined city of Old Gis, which was probably just called Gis back then, I'm betting. Founded by Grasdan the Great. Old Gis is in Giskar, which is the peninsula that stems from Slaver's Bay down to the Summer Sea. However, their control spread, as empires tend to do, and eventually even expanded all the way south to Sothorios, which is the continent south of Essos. Krasnus tells Dany the Unsullied are the lockstep legion come again. Well, what that means is the empire relied heavily on highly disciplined, lockstep legions of free soldiers, said to have been nearly unbeatable on the battlefield. Their discipline and obedience destroyed or enslaved other nations. Of course, that is until the Valyrians showed up with their dragons. As Dany tells us in this chapter, the lockstep legions were no match for dragon power, The nations fought five battles, Gis coming out on the losing end each time. In the end, the capital city of Gis had its brick walls pulled down, its streets and buildings turned to ash and cinder by dragon flame, and its fields were sown with salt, sulfur, and skulls.
So it's interesting. I didn't realize that Essos had a similar history in that respect to the Westeros, that basically there was an established order, and the Valyrians and their dragons came and upset the whole thing, and basically dominated by dragon power.
Yeah.
Then the same happened on Westeros. Interesting.
I agree.
Comparison with the television show. Jorah is present for the conversation with the slave owner. His translator, Masendi, as I mentioned, is not a child, but a young woman, played by Natalie Emmanuel, who's in the Fast and the Furious movies, which I've never seen. But
I did not know that.
Out there.
I liked her as Masendi. I thought she was
very
good.
I liked her as Masendi, too. And she was also in a dodgy soap opera called Hollyoaks in England. In the UK, so.
I did not know that.
The conversation that they have with Krasnys Monaklas is very similar, including the mutilation of the Drew the Short Straw was in the front row unsullied soldier.
Oh, shoot. Wrong time.
Yes, exactly.
Hey, you know, speaking of comparison with the TV show, we just got an email today. I don't know if you'd seen it, but the sender mentioned that comparison with the TV show is his favorite part of the whole
Well,
show.
I will stop phoning it in then. I'll try it.
I said, glad to hear. Simon and I are glad to hear that. Simon, especially since he works so hard on it. In parentheses, sometimes.
There's a lot of. Do I remember? I vaguely remember that scene. That's close enough. So Pedantry Corner, I mean, there's nothing really. It's just the sheer waste of the Unsullied training. I mean,
yeah.
Dany notices the depopulation of Astapor. Well, there's 8,000 dead children because of this crop of Unsullied.
Yeah, like every crop gets, you know.
Yeah.
It's continuous.
The Unsullied themselves, it's only a fraction of the ones who they took on. Because
right.
Many get killed along the way, presumably. And then they kill the next generation of them.
Right.
It just seems such a waste.
Yeah, I'm with you.
News and notes.
So, during their live conversation, which was called Curious George, An Evening with George Martin and Kevin Smith, which we mentioned in previous episodes, Martin told Kevin Smith about growing up in low-income housing where no dogs or cats were allowed. So, he had turtles. They were cheap dime store turtles, and he kept them in a bowl which sat inside a toy castle in his room. As he went on to say, the thing about cheap turtles is that they didn't live very long, regardless of how well he tried to maintain them. So young George came up with the idea that the turtles were killing each other for the right to the throne in the toy castle. Thus was sparked the kindling that grew into A Game of Thrones, the first book of our series.
That's a fascinating story. And it goes to something that that I've heard before and kind of worries me about the future. Part of what makes kids and sort of young people generally creative and full of ideas is boredom and
yes.
the need to
yes.
entertain themselves.
Yes.
And you can see, you know, as a poor kid with a turtle, you come up with, I mean, that's not that exciting, but he used his imagination and came up with something that spawned into this. But
right.
Our kids, they're never bored.
They're never bored.
They're constantly distracted by things, but they're never going to come up with anything. They're never going to be creative.
That is, yes, I worry about that same thing. I really do. Mm-hmm.
It's a great time to consider some Ghosts of Harrenhal merchandise. We've got a sale going on now. Actually, I saw my wife on that website the other day, so I think I know what I'm getting for Christmas. So, yes, there's a sale going on at our Threadless website. Keep an eye out for more. We'll update social media when we see them.
That's right. And, yeah, there's also, if you wouldn't mind going out and checking out our YouTube page and subscribing, because we need more subscribers in order to do the things that we want to do. We've never really our YouTube channel has always been kind of an afterthought. We're trying to put more attention on it, but in order to do that, we need more subscribers to open up, to unlock things that we want to do. So if you want more things on our YouTube channel, go subscribe.
I did it.
All right.
Since you last talked about it. So there we go. All right, let's conclude this one. So it's a tricky choice for Dany. She does need an army. The Unsullied would clearly be an excellent fighting force, but does she irrevocably taint her cause by buying them?
Yeah, right. She's getting contradictory advice from two men whose opinion she greatly respects. Although Dora's stock has definitely fallen a bit since the whole unwanted kiss thing. Although she did still follow his direction to Astapor. So, you know, and she wants to play it all legit on her path to the Iron Throne, as Arstyn suggests. But, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty in relying on others in that plan that Arstyn lays out, which is go to Pentos, stay protected by Illyrio. He'll send feelers over to Westeros. And then when the time is right, you may have a large force rally around you there. And she's like, yeah, may is a tricky word.
but I mean, the one thing that will happen in that time, though, is that those dragons will continue to grow. And that's all that Aegon needed. He didn't need anything but the dragons.
Right. And this time, Westeros would have the benefit of history on hand.
Right. So fewer fools will take on those dragons.
That's exactly what I meant. Yes.
Yeah. Well, normally I wouldn't approve of a queen, but your fire-breathing beast has convinced me.
And, you know, then on the other hand, you buy 8,000 Unsullied. It puts more control in your own hands. Sure, you have a slimy feeling and possibly hurt alliance opportunities, but at least it gives her the feeling of more control for herself. But again, just going back to what you just said, until those dragons are large enough, even bringing 8,000 Unsullied into Westeros is not enough to sway the tide if she loses a lot of alliances.
Well, that's the question, isn't it? Yes. I mean, she, unlike Aegon, will have allies straight off the bat. She could go while the dragons are still young if she has enough allies.
Right.
But I don't think she can go. I don't think she can go while the dragons are this young, empty-handed, because there aren't enough allies. There's too much confusion. I mean, even the natural allies would be like, oh, you've chosen a terrible time. You know, because people are cowed and afraid of, like, the Lannisters, for instance.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the Tyrells have gone in with them. That's a huge block now. That's the whole of the sort of middle and west, and even I mean, if they get the Martells as well, I mean, it's
I'm nodding along with you, because the alliance of the Tyrells and the Lannisters really does hurt her cause, unless she has three adult dragons. That would help.
Or a really fierce army of Dothraki or Unsullied. Either of those would help.
Sure.
But, see, you know, honestly, I don't think the Unsullied would be more unpopular than the Dothraki. I mean, if you think about it, the Dothraki would create slaves.
Right.
That would be every bit as unpopular as having an army of slaves.
Yes, yes. I'm with you. So the slavers priced up everything on her ships. Is it going to be enough to buy 8,000, 4,000 Unsullied if she chooses to go that route? I don't know, it doesn't, as we were talking earlier, it doesn't necessarily, we don't know how much was on there, but that's a lot of people to be purchasing.
Yeah, you're squeezing all the juice out of those three ships if you get 8,000 Unsullied for them, that's for sure.
Right.
And the question for me is, so given that these Unsullied are all foot soldiers, there's none of them are leaders, who's she going to have lead them? She doesn't have that many staff on hand. You know, let's say she gets 8,000. Right, sure, Jorah can be the general over all of them, but I mean, she's got her blood riders, but they're not necessarily leaders of this kind of organized force either.
Right, Right. There's very few options on her current staff. She could put Strong Belwas over overseeing a few. I'm not sure how much that's going to work.
And she's very confused about Jorah. She's lashing out at him. She doesn't want to be alone with him. She's slapped him.
Yeah, we'll have to see how that plays out, because Jorah was kind of her rock. He's always been her rock. And now she is afraid to be alone with the person that she has always relied so heavily on. So that's it's going to be something we'll have to see how it works out.
Next week we're back to Westeros with Bran.
We are. We're heading to the north with Bran. Excellent. We've been all around lately.
Yeah, we have. Well, there's three ways that you can help us. If you could leave us a positive review and subscribe to us on YouTube, that would be terrific. You can buy merchandise for the holidays at ghostsofharrenhal.threadless.com. There is a sale going on right now. And you can buy us a cup of Arbor Gold at buymeacoffee.com/ghostsharrenhal. Where you can become a sustainer at the Lord Paramount or Knight of the Realm level to get all those great benefits and join the existing sustainers who we have a great time with.
That we sure do. And of course, you can always reach us at ghost.harrenhal@gmail.com. Go out and follow us on Twitter at ghostharrenhal. We're on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Discord. And I'll just say, we've gotten a lot of new Discord members lately, and we're having a lot of fun conversations.
I best swing by at some point and say
you
hello.
Should indeed.
Well, thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.